Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Robbie Earle, and by my good longtime friend from work, Kyle Schoenewill. And today is, I guess you can look at it one of two ways. It's either the second episode back where we're talking about the MCU proper, or the first. This is the first movie that we're kind of resuming in our phase four rewatch in a while. But last week's episode, if you didn't catch that, it was kind of our first time getting back in the headspace of the MCU. And that was a really fun conversation. So before I forget, I want to remind people to go check that out, because I think that if you're a listener of this podcast, especially a longtime listener, that's probably going to be right up your alley. It felt very much like a throwback to not even just the original podcast days, but the original conversations that you and I had that kind of inspired the podcast in the first place.
No doubt. I was very proud of that episode. So yeah, definitely go check it out. Definitely check it out. You're not going to want to miss it. You know, we've been in the X-Men universe for so long now, it feels like 12, 13 mm-hmm. weeks, 3 months plus probably. And so
yeah,
last week we made two rules. Every comment has to be positive about where the MCU is going, and we will not talk at all about X-Men or mutants. Now, granted, we talk about Deadpool and Wolverine to kick off the episode, but then after that, it's really fun. I think it's really fun. And you know, what's yeah. really funny as a follow-up, Robbie, I brought up I went on a huge tangent about Vision.
And,
it just so happens, because of our schedule, that we actually recorded that episode last Wednesday. So it came out on Monday, but we had pre-recorded it like 5 days early. And I say that only because literally the day we finished recording it and I had gone on that rant, there is either confirmation or a heavy rumor that they are developing Vision Quest over on Disney Plus, bringing back Vision. Now, to what degree is it the Vision we know? I don't know, but I did think that was quite the crazy timely follow-up. And I've had multiple people message me about that Chris Evans Infinity Saga, Infinity Stones returning thing. Not that that's confirmed. I think that's more of a rumor than the Vision Quest thing. But isn't that wild timing? Like, we had truly
that is wild timing.
Started talking about that without knowing any of that stuff. So anyways, it's a
and
great
I'm
episode.
I'm still not sure. I think because Vision Quest was originally greenlit kind of like way back. And then now I feel like they, you know, everything's shuffled since Marvel kind of started their taking stock phase. So I'm not totally sure, because I think originally that show was being developed by Jack Schaefer, who then I think turned her attention to Agatha all along. And so I'm not sure if that's still the original, the same project or not. But it does seem, I think it's confirmed that it is for sure a Paul Bettany Vision focused show that's coming out in 2026.
One of the sign of the times, for better or for worse, you know, back in the day, like 4 years ago, when Marvel had a big announcement at Comic-Con, or what is it, D23?
Uh-huh.
basically all of those things came to fruition because they had just less projects and it was a different moment.
Right.
Since COVID and the writer strikes and stuff, I think there's like levels to, like, for example, think about how many announcements we've had on Blade, how many times it's being rewritten or redone. And I still don't know if it's ever going to release. That's just so different. But like Fantastic Four, it's for sure happening. Like that's not going to change.
Mm-hmm.
I think this falls in the category of closer to for sure happening. It doesn't matter at this point. It's so far away. I don't love getting tied up into that stuff anyways. Plus, I'll add this. But okay, this is an amazing tangent I just stumbled upon. We have an incredible Friends from Work insider, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you follow the Marvel News and Rumors channel on our Discord channel?
I don't, because I don't really like... I don't like knowing things that I'm not supposed to know. You know, maybe that's like the lawyer in me, but I just don't want to like, I've been in the past really disappointed when I found out any kind of like plot element and in a movie or like in something like the MCU, like in an overarching saga, like, cause it just changes the experience. Like if you know that something's that we're building towards like a certain thing that we know too much about, then, you know, cause it's even like Infinity War, we didn't know fully what that would look like until pretty much like Ragnarok. Like we had some idea, but it's like, I don't know. I don't want to know.
I
don't want to know too much.
Like you, I don't want to know anything either. So I rarely pop in there, truly, but I jumped in there one time. Maybe I was tagged on something. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I did scroll through a few things. And one, I learned that there are people that do like to know those things, which is fine. So if you do like to know those things, in that channel, we have an FFW insider, which I'm going to choose right now to remain nameless. Don't know if he wants his name out there, but it's unbelievable. He does it in the most tasteful way possible. So if that is your thing, there are things like, I think he works in Hollywood or is in LA and like, kind of understands the community, but he's not doing it just for scoops or clicks. And so he'll like corroborate a casting announcement. And then 6 months later, it'll be correct. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So that's a tiny little pitch and a shout out to him. If that is your thing, it's not Robbie and I's thing. We have a Discord channel on our website, the ffwpodcast.com. And you can find the link there. And there's a specific channel that some people are connected in. It's kind of wild.
One thing that's nice too, is for me, you know, in the same way that me getting off Twitter was really only possible because of Greg, like compiling all the things that I normally would have seen on Twitter. He's also done a really good job of filtering out the rumors that he knows people like you and me will not want to know versus the ones that are kind of like either amorphous enough or far-fetched enough to where they're still interesting, but it's like, okay, well, you know, yeah, maybe we're heading towards something that would look like X, but it's not like a spoiler. And so that's another, it's a plug for if you are kind of like us and you don't necessarily want the raw rumor data, but you want like little hints of where we're going and things that are corroborated like that. Greg does a really good job of distilling that down in the Sunday Post that we talked about, I think, last week as well. So if you, that's our weekly newsletter on Substack. So those are the two
for free
areas. Like if you just want like more information, I would say like go hang out in the Discord and subscribe to us there.
And I would imagine it's only going to ramp up now from here until the end of the year, just because there will be stuff in general. There'll be conversations all around Deadpool, obviously, and around us covering Deadpool 1 and 2 as well. And then Agatha will be the first kind of live action weekly series in a year, basically. And so if that starts becoming a thing, there'll be some great conversations going on over there. I just got to say before we dive into Shang-Chi, I have had such a busy and yet fulfilling week/year. This has been by far the busiest year of my life. I'm exhausted. Like right now I'm exhausted. You know that feeling when you wake up and you're underslept and your eyes kind of almost burn? Or like, like they're like red and not opening. That's me right now, this moment. I'm excited to be here talking to you, but I just got to be totally transparent. I am exhausted, man. And Annika is on a quick little trip to visit her sister. So I'm solo parenting, which gives you respect for all the single parents out there. Holy smokes.
Oh man, yeah.
But I have been in the studio just grinding music for so long, and it has been so tiring and so fulfilling, Robbie. You would appreciate it so much. You know how like you'll work on something for a year. It's like it's 5% of what these people experience with a film, which is like some of the stuff that I've worked on for a year or a year and a half is finally all releasing to the public.
Yeah.
For example, one of the people I've worked with in making a record, and he's a close friend, has a billboard right now in Nashville that I drove by. And that's so cool
that's
for
crazy.
Me. Like
that's
so
cool.
I'm equal parts just tired and not here mentally, and then equal parts like so fulfilled and thankful for what this year has been. So that's my state of mind as we go into Shang-Chi. And I did rewatch it. So I guess rewatched X-Men Apocalypse, which you and I are going to be recording tomorrow for next week on Friends from Work Plus. So
yeah,
I'm still putting in the effort, still putting in the time, but I'm exhausted.
That's next up for me. And I haven't been putting it off. In some ways, I've kind of been setting aside time where I can actually like really focus in, which I did for Days of Future Past as well, because I was watching the Rogue Cut.
It's not hard to watch. In some ways, it's fascinating. It's fun. It was fun to like see.
I've gotten some interesting feedback. Like I was hearing from Greg that I think whenever he was halfway through, he was enjoying it more than he expected.
I can't wait to talk about the Oscar Isaac side of all this and how he went on to do Star Wars and Moon Knight and kind of what that all means. I've watched a lot of like those actors roundtables.
Yeah.
By the way, and again, I'm sorry, these are so many tangents. I think it's Variety. Let me think. Somebody on YouTube puts out these actors roundtables where they get like 6 or 7 A-listers at a table without even, there is a host, but it's not like a host-led thing. And they kind of just let them start talking about it. I have found those to be very fascinating from the perspective of, I really like watching MCU actors interacting with other actors and then just kind of what they say about it. And it does show you the ones that are probably more tied in, but yeah, I can't wait to talk about it. I love this little clip of Oscar Isaac not defending Moon Knight, but you know how in a situation like that, it can kind of start going a little Martin Scorsese where it's like, you do those projects for the money and then you do this one for the creativity and you can keep those separate. And he like chimes in and goes, yeah, but I'm trying to make it the same thing with Moon Knight. Like I did Moon Knight because I wanted to make it creative and I can make the money. And I was like, wow, thank you for chiming in against like the pressure kind of does that make sense? Like the easy thing would have been like, oh yeah. And just say that and move on. Or like Tom Hiddleston. Like Tom Hiddleston does not shy away from what he's creating at Loki when he's around the other people. Anyways, I have some insight there. And so I'm excited to talk about X-Men Apocalypse on Friends from Work Plus. But that's not today. Sorry. That's not today.
Right. Well, although before we do jump in, you know, I guess this kind of makes sense. I wanted to kind of zoom out some and take a look at where we have been in our Phase 4 watch order. Because I've really, you know, I've enjoyed being able to do it this way because we've kind of been fitting it in where we can and in chapters, and that's kind of how we've had it divided up. But it is, you know, we watched Wakanda Forever not too long ago, but then, you know, I think No Way Home and Hawkeye were Christmas time. So it's been a bit. And that's kind of the fun of this, of the watch order and rewatch process on Friends from Work. And it always has been. I think the difference with Phase 4 is kind of what you started the episode talking about when you were talking about Vision Quest, where, you know, if you go back through the Infinity Saga, by and large, it was told chronologically, like, you know, more or less, like, Captain America, the First Avenger was the last Phase 1 movie before Avengers. So like that's an exception. Captain Marvel's an exception, Black Widow. But generally what we were doing was more figuring out, okay, well, Phase 2, it doesn't necessarily really matter what order you watch like Iron Man 3, The Dark World, and Winter Soldier in chronologically. but it then becomes a question of like, well, you know, just what tells the best story. But I think phase four is such a different process when it comes to rewatching it. First, because the number of projects in phase four is like at least two normal phases from the Infinity Saga combined, if not more. I need to do the math there. Certainly, it's like three or four times as long as phase one. And so that's part of it. But also, you were talking about, you know, the sign of the times. And I've been thinking a lot about how the pandemic not just impacted the number of projects that we're releasing and the quality and you know, whatever you think about that, but also the order that things were released in and how that affects the story that Marvel ultimately had to tell. Because it's, I don't think that they had the level of control because of everything that happened with COVID and when that happened that was really important during the Infinity Saga. And so I think what I've been trying to recapture here as we've been doing this rewatch is something that feels a little bit more intentional. And again, you know, the projects are what they are. And I think in some cases, they actually had to make some slight story adjustments because a project that would have informed, you know, this one has not come out now and will not come out until like months after this. And so you have to like remove certain plot elements or whatever. But I still think that even then, there's a way to kind of create a compelling narrative. And that's what we've been trying to do. So as a reminder, we started this with this kind of first in-game reflection trilogy of WandaVision, Falcon Winter Soldier, and Far From Home. And that was really the like the pure look back and like emphasizing that that era is over, especially with kind of the ending of Far From Home, contrasting that with the beginning of the Infinity Saga with Tony unmasking and how different the tone is there. Which, as an aside, I went and saw Far From Home in theaters. This past week.
Have you caught every single Spider-Man film?
I haven't. I missed the two Garfield films in theaters, but I felt guilty about it and watched them at home anyway.
Okay. Did you go to Homecoming?
I watched Homecoming at home as well.
Okay.
Because I wasn't even totally sold on going to the Holland ones because, you know, I've seen those in theaters and part of the fun was seeing movies I hadn't seen originally or hadn't seen in a long time.
But you went to Far From Home.
I've just seen the Holland ones so much. But I was really excited to go see Far From Home because they were playing the extended edition of that movie that I have never been able to find online or in any like home streaming version. And what that is basically, I think that there are like a couple of deleted scenes that are thrown in, some things I didn't recognize, but they take that like Peter's to-do list little short from that you can find on the Blu-ray and put that like chronologically in the film, which was something I always wished that they had left in the film originally. And I loved it. It was like such a small addition, like compared even less additional footage than No Way Home, but also like less clunky than the No Way Home extended edition. Like, and it gives me again kind of everything I wanted because you get more time with Peter at the beginning being Spider-Man in New York. And you get like that clip that was in the early trailer of him taking down like this crime family and talking to the cops and saying like, you know, I don't have time to be the new Iron Man. I'm too busy doing your job. And it's all very...
I don't even know that I've seen this.
Oh, you should go watch it on... you can watch the short. It's probably on Disney Plus too now. But it's just a special feature for Far From Home.
How was the film then in general?
What's that?
How was the film then in general with that in?
I thought it was... like, again, what I liked about the No Way Home extended stuff is that it kind of... it gave us a little bit more time looking at the actual impact in his life, like his daily life of everyone knowing his identity, instead of it just being like, oh, look, it's, you know, all this bad press. And then he goes and gets it undone. And here I was always kind of bummed because you never see him actually suit up as Spider-Man until, other than like the Aunt May event, until he gets to Venice. And even then, it's like he's most of the battle there, he's not in costume. And then he puts on the costume just to go to meet Nick Fury and Mysterio.
Yeah.
And it always just felt like, man, there's like a big chunk of this movie where we don't get to see him, like what his life as Spider-Man is looking like post-Endgame. Mm-hmm. And so having that context and having him talk about the, like whenever he talks about the weight of being Spider-Man now in a post-Tony world, I feel like that hits harder because you've seen him trying to do that. Like he is actively trying to figure out how to be the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, but also is getting all this pressure to like fill in. So I thought it added a lot. And even the little like additional things here and there seemed to, like it never felt like anything was forced. I would really like, if it is available as a thing that people can get online, I would say it's just the version of the movie that people should watch.
I think Far From Home is fantastic. I always have, you know that. From day one, mm-hmm. I've ranked it higher than most people. And I think in general, it's fair to say you and I are slightly higher on that film than the general public.
Yeah, I think so.
Anyways, that's the ending of the Endgame Reflection trilogy in the Phase 4 rewatch.
Which I do have so many Spider-Man thoughts after that I'm excited to talk about. Maybe we can just have a Spider-Man episode soon. But yeah, so the next chapter of the Phase 4 watch order was, we started with Eternals. We kind of like,
by the way, save those thoughts. And as soon as they announce something big for Spider-Man 4, let's do a Spider-Man episode.
Just
table
fun.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. I've already got like a note going in my notes app dedicated towards it.
You love to see it.
So Far From Home kind of ends with that cliffhanger moment, and you don't know what's going to happen now that Peter's identity is revealed. And so we take that opportunity to kind of go way back and zoom out and start with Eternals and kind of look at, okay, like while we're like stuck in that cliffhanger mode, let's see what else has been going on around the world, both post blip and kind of been informed by things that came before it. And so we do Eternals, Moon Knight, Love and Thunder, and then that all kind of culminates in the big reveal of what's been going on in Loki season one. That then leads into the next chapter where we pick back up where we left Peter and follow up on the identity reveal in No Way Home. But now it's like we're getting away from the Endgame reflection and more now looking at like what it's looking like moving forward with like new legacies. So it's like we see the impact with Peter, but also with Hawkeye and the loss of Natasha, which I think is like partially a look back, but also it's really focused on the introduction of Kate. And then the same with Wakanda Forever, which was the last film that we watched, which is in some ways really focused on the loss of T'Challa, but is also focused on like what the next stages look like with Shuri taking up the Black Panther mantle. And so it's kind of this chapter about like these they're characters that we're mostly familiar with, but they're kind of changing into something new as represented by Peter's new suit and Kate taking the Hawkeye name and again, Wakanda Forever. And that's kind of where we left off. And then now we're in the final chapter. We just have four projects left in our Phase 4 watch order, at least as it currently stands. And here we're introduced now to all these new heroes, like new cultures, new dimensions. We've seen magic misused and like the mayhem that can produce early on in WandaVision. And we've seen like Wong attempting to kind of take stock of the world and doing his best to protect it briefly in like a No Way Home.
And She-Hulk.
But right. And that's coming here like in this final stretch because we haven't actually gotten the She-Hulk yet in our watch order. But
sorry,
now we're going to.
Yeah, you're right. Sorry.
But yeah, now like starting with Shang-Chi, we're going to be kind of finishing out this picture of what the post in-game world actually looks like. Like, we've kind of been in this transition mode for a lot of Phase 4. And this is where it's like, we have just things that are established in a new way. Like, you don't have necessarily, even in the last chapter, where you have like a new Black Panther and a new Hawkeye and kind of a new version of Spider-Man. Here, it's like we have a whole new character in Shang-Chi, a whole new character in Ms. Marvel. She-Hulk is not, I think, meant to replace Hulk. That's really a new character. And then all of that kind of culminates in Multiverse of Madness, where we kind of start looking at these, like, what could have been's and what might be's. And we'll get to that whenever we get to it. But I think that it's going to be a really great chapter to be going through as we're also finishing the X-Men rewatch, which was always the hope. Because we'll kind of have Multiverse of Madness, I think, right before we hit the Deadpool films on the main feed. And so we'll all, if we're looking at parallel tracks, those universes will, to some degree, collide. But I don't want to get ahead of ourselves there. Shang-Chi is the first stop here. And I wanted to kind of open up the conversation.
Well, before you get into Shang-Chi, I do want to say, first of all, I love the thought that you put into that. I love viewing it that way. I think that's really profound of you to think of it that way. And I think it's actually probably helpful for listeners to even view it that way, in that those first three projects really kind of are an epilogue to the Infinity Saga. And you could almost watch them as such. This is different characters wrestling with the things that we still were wrestling with 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then I love the middle chunk, organizing it this way as kind of a transitional period of, okay, we're kind of reflecting at times on the Infinity Saga and Endgame, but it's mostly launching, or in the case of like Hawkeye, trying to transition. What does that mean for, or even Thor, what does that mean for a hero that has done all this stuff, has been around since Endgame, has done all these things, and now is getting older or has to pass the baton. And then, then thinking of some of these other projects as just straight new entries now into the universe. Mm-hmm. I do think that's really helpful. So I wanted to agree with that. I appreciate the work you've done. Before you start getting into Shang-Chi, I think let's take a quick break from these sponsors. Yeah. We'll be right back. Okay, I just said before the break, we're going to get into Shang-Chi. I do want to get into that. I want to add one tidbit that kind of frames this entire conversation and phase for me. Mm-hmm. I was looking at Shang-Chi and then the upcoming, I think it's Ms. Marvel and She-Hulk, right? In that order, I think.
Yes.
Which is going to be our next few episodes. And I really feel like, in general, our culture has lost the ability to disagree on things, but has also lost the ability to have nuanced discussions. Mm-hmm. And I think we're a little bit turning the corner on that, and it's starting to come back around. But so many of these projects, specifically the next three that we're looking at, not the epilogue phase four part, but now this new launching of characters, so much of it was just steeped in toxicity about everything either needs to be the best or the worst. It's the best team or the worst team, or my sports team is the absolute worst. This guy's the best. This is the best president. Everyone's going to die from COVID. No one's going to die from COVID. This will solve all COVID. This won't. Like, it's our culture has just gotten so absurd to where nuanced discussion was almost impossible, I felt like, for a while. I do think that is slightly turning, as I said. And that's just what comes to my mind when I watch Shang-Chi or I kick off some of these projects. For me, hot take here, there are some things that Shang-Chi does unbelievable and puts it into a tier one film. And there are some things that it just does not do very well at all, in my opinion. And we put it as like a tier three or four film. And that's not that crazy to say. There are categories of it that make it great. And there are things of it where it has flaws. It's not Civil War in that I can watch and go, I can't find anything. And I do think a little bit on a rewatch, you start noticing some of the things that don't hold up as well as we get further and further away. But you also can notice some of the things that go well. It's just, it's so anti our culture to even say that, because on YouTube, this episode would get way more clicks and people have made entire livings on this. If I said Shang-Chi is the best Marvel Cinematic Universe film they've ever created, and here's why, that would do well. And if I said Shang-Chi is total trash, like look at this one clip of bad CGI and let me not take off my motion filtering smoothing, and then I'm going to put it online and then look at how bad this looks, then I can get clicks that way too. And so we are not that podcast. I think that there are things that are not perfect, and I think that there are things well done.
Yeah. Well, no, and I feel like we're actually on a similar page there.
Already, some people are like, oh my gosh, Kyle doesn't love everything about the film. Why do you hate it? And some people are going, what? You think there's anything good about that trash? You know what I mean?
Well, we put out this was years ago now. And I don't even remember how many films were out at the time, but we ranked the Phase 4 films, and Shang-Chi was not like the number one or number two behind No Way Home. And there was a
hot take, by the way.
Yeah. You're right. It's just so weird because again, it's the narratives that you kind of like. It's always weird to me to see people have to apologize for liking a movie that is generally not liked, or vice versa. Like it's like with Apocalypse, like if I'm not saying this is you, but like if people do watch it and they're like, I love this movie, I thought it was really great. Like just because we have this like general cultural memory of it being bad, I can't even really speak to it because I don't remember much about it at all. Like that doesn't mean that now has to be like the party line. It's all so like, it's so contextual is the thing that these rewatches always show me. Like,
well, and there are things, there are individual aspects too. When you say that, like we lump it all into the bad category, but then you forget that there are some things that are good still in it.
Right. Yeah. No, and I do think like in that era, like it's hard to recreate how you're watching something like years later based on like a from a rewatch perspective. We've talked about this a lot because like maybe you were seeing it with different people, but also just like there are these cultural influences that we can't even really be aware of until we step out of them. And I think that at the time there was so much buzz around the post-Endgame projects. And it was like Black Widow generally, like at the time, I feel like Black Widow was not as controversial of a movie to love. But, you know, it wasn't like a slam dunk, but I don't think that many people were disappointed. But then I think Shang-Chi was, you know, as the next film that came out after Endgame, it was a totally new character. It was kind of a fresh style. And I think that it was like a delightful thing for people. And I think that if you plucked that out and put it into something like later in the release order, I'm not saying that it wouldn't have done as well or would have gotten received in a different way, but my point is it didn't have to contend with the, oh man, Marvel's really going downhill narrative that later entries did. And I think that matters because like you're either, it's the difference between coming in as the favorite and coming in as the underdog. And I think this movie really benefited from being released at a period where Marvel was still the favorite.
Steer us a specific way in the conversation. Where do you want to start with breaking down this film?
So I want, the first thing I want to talk about, and part of the reason I wanted to open with the watch order here, I've had fun watching these things and having that MCU timeline book that they put out and being able to kind of cross-reference. Mm. And honestly, like, it's not a book that makes sense for me to ever read straight through. It's almost more of a reference thing. But it is really well done. Like, it's a really fun book. And there are, like, timeline things, but also just some really fun little, like, you can find this double page spread of all the Iron Man suits and where they appeared and all the Spider-Man suits and where they appeared. And it's just like for an MCU nerd, it's kind of a treasure trove. But they do, like, definitively place certain events in these movies at, like, seasons and years. So it's like, you know, this is spring 2023.
This one is, like, particular? Oh.
Well, like, they'll say that. This one, I've got the book in the other room. Like, year-wise, I'm not super concerned with it, except for how it relates to other projects. And this is why I opened talking about how the pandemic affected release orders. This movie is supposed to take place, like, before Falcon and Winter Soldier. If we're looking strictly at, like, the timestamp that Marvel gives it. And that is, it's not a big deal at all. But I was thinking about that as I was watching it and kind of weighing where we have it in our order and where it would be in Marvel's, like, chronological order. And that just strikes me as so strange, because WandaVision and Falcon Winter Soldier and Far From Home are all really dealing with, like, oh my gosh, this crazy event that just happened and the world has changed and how do we kind of make sense of it, particularly Falcon Winter Soldier. But, like, even Far From Home, it's like you see the Tony murals everywhere. And it's so weird that Shang-Chi would take place before those projects, and that we only get, like, we get one reference where they're like, you know, anything can happen. We're now living in a world where half of the population could disappear at any second. But otherwise, it's just like San Francisco, for instance, looks no different than it does in, like, Ant-Man and the Wasp. Like, it doesn't feel as though you're living in the aftermath of that event. And that's where I'm like, the story that's being told within either the release order or the chronological order just doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because it's like, this was either a global, like really impactful thing that's going to take a while to start, like, coming out of, or it's not. And we're just kind of moving forward. But I think it's weird where this fell, like, on both fronts for Marvel. And I am biased, but I think part of the reason why we put it here at the end is because it makes a lot more sense to me after you've kind of gone through those transition films and projects like we were talking about earlier. Otherwise, it all rings kind of hollow, I guess, that it just opens with them, like, having a great time being, like, car valets and karaokeing.
I agree. I don't mean this in a weird way. It doesn't really matter, though, right? Because you could watch it in the way we have it structured, and who cares? Like, even if this was happening while those other things were happening or just before, it's possible that you just got a little glimpse of normal life, who just, they maybe weren't as affected, or maybe they weren't as tied to Tony Stark or whatever. But I'm with you. Why even timestamp it there then? Like, you could easily just timestamp it later, and then it doesn't even introduce any issues.
Yeah.
So I'm with you. I just don't know that.
Well, no, it's not it's not like a complaint, really. I bring it up because I think that is a major difference between this saga in general the Infinity Saga. Like, everything kind of made sense. Like,
yeah,
you can't, you know, like, you wouldn't watch Winter Soldier, like, before Avengers, or, like, somewhere in phase three, or even
then the question becomes, like, why double down on that in the book? Why is somebody not on the team asking the same thing you're asking? I don't know.
Yeah, it's just maybe they're just trying to kind of harmonize the viewing experience from release order a bit more. But I will say, like, I was happy to see that in a lot of ways, what we kind of have coming lines up a lot with that timeline that's in the book. Like, I think Multiverse of Madness does seem to occur towards the end of Phase 4. So I like that we're going to end with that. But that is for, that's for later. That was just kind of my opening thought because I kept thinking through the whole movie, like, that it, there are, like, there are elements that just make, like, even the Wong stuff is weird to me.
Yeah. How quickly Wong's already, right, like, assembling a team. And, like, the post-credits scene doesn't make nearly as much sense if it's happening, like, directly after Endgame.
Right.
That's way cooler to be like, wow. It's way cooler if it's been years and years and now the team's reassembling or something.
Right.
Let's start there.
Even, like,
I want to start there.
I don't even know how Carol's hair has grown that much in, like, you know, less than a year.
Okay, so watch it in the way we have it. Watch it in the way we have it. Trust us on it. It's good. That is one of the things that I desperately want follow-up on to tie in last week's episode. Yeah. Rewatching this film, it's weird to start with the very end of the film and the post-credit sequence, but it's so spectacular, the last whatever that is, 6 minutes of the movie, in that that is the role I want to see Shang-Chi operate in. I just think it's so cool to have this character who does have these powers and abilities, but openly acknowledges, knows less than the Avengers, like, still thinks it's so cool to be talking to Avengers, but the Avengers think that he could really bring something to the team. I like there being different levels to this. I like there being the veterans and the rookies and what that looks like.
Yeah. I like, I was thinking that we would get some answer in the Marvels about what that was.
Yeah.
Like what, and I'm still not sure.
It's been a while.
If we did or not.
Yep.
Like, we certainly found out about the bangle and where that comes from, and that plays a big role.
Maybe
in
they
film,
would just say a little bit of a multiversal artifact is the only kind of answer we got, ish.
Yeah. But, you know, it's the reason why I think it's interesting is, and I think this was in our recap before the Marvels, but our next project in the rewatch is Ms. Marvel, and people will remember that in the opening of, I think, episode 3, there is, like, you get that brief shot of the Ten Rings symbol, and Laura Cartman even works in the Shang-Chi theme in there. And so it's like that there is some kind of relation. But yeah, man, that is still one of my favorite post-credit scenes. And I'm really curious to see where we go. Where we go with that, and also kind of like, I guess, looking at the movie itself and follow up stuff, I think I had a better time on this viewing with, like, just the Ten Rings in general. Like, I was reading that timeline book along the way because I've always wondered exactly how connected the Ten Rings is supposed to be, not with Iron Man 3, but with Iron Man 1, since that is, like,
yeah,
that is the organization that was supposed to capture him. And at the time, I think we talked about this in the first film, like one of our very, very, very first episodes. But that was, I think the Mandarin was going to be the original villain of the first Iron Man. And so it kind of makes sense because you see hints of that still in the final version.
But and it's a little bit tough to buy. It's the same organization now, I think.
It is, but I think that it's like there's a, they talk about them working in the shadows and trying to kind of influence things politically. And so I think the implication to me is that's not necessarily coming straight from him, like straight from Wenwu. And I think you also get a sense that, you know, whenever he sends Shang-Chi out on the assassination mission, he says, like, you know, when you come back, will rebuild the Ten Rings to what it was. So I think, like, even at the time when Tony was kidnapped, it was not really like the version of the Ten Rings that had existed prior to him getting married and then after the loss of his wife. But I'm like, I like that they are, there is an attempt now to tie those together. And then I kind of like that the movie ends with the Ten Rings will return and the setup there with his sister. Like, I'm kind of curious to see, like, as we get into this, like, the ground level lane that we've talked about with, like, Thunderbolts and Captain America, like, is that going to be something that we continue to explore in a way that kind of follows up on the, like, Iron Man 1 type stuff? Like, where we have a... Like, I would like for the world... I think we're at a point now where we've expanded quite a lot, and I think it would be great to be making connections with what's already there.
Yeah. We've done this, you know, and now we need to kind of, some things to start going like this, you know, a little bit. So we know where we're headed. Speaking of things that worked better on a rewatch, I think I've always kind of undersold Wenwu in general as a character and an actor. I didn't realize when Shang-Chi originally came out that he's like a legend of an actor.
Oh yeah.
I think he does a really good job, and I think the character's fairly compelling. I'm in. I'm up on Wenwu. And that's where, like, going back to the nuanced discussion, like, here's what I mean by this. Like, I'm rewatching the film, and let me give you some examples. Trevor shows up, and it's an awesome reveal. And Trevor provides some of the funniest lines in the film, stuff that makes me laugh out loud. That's a weird horse is so funny.
Gets me.
The apes conversation, by the way, shout out Planet of the Apes. Check out my screensaver episode. Is so funny. If they could get apes to act like that, you know, like, there are some really, really funny lines. Even the, I'm not dead, I'm just playing it. You know, that stuff is funny.
Right.
On the other hand, I would say what we said originally, same thing. I think he's in the movie a little too long. It kind of makes the fight at the end not feel as impactful when there's a kind of a literal jester there. Kind of pulls away from some of it. I think, like, the bus sequence and the action there with the music is so cool and fun. And I love the tie-in of the same Spider-Man. Do a flip guy, you know, filming it. Shout out Severance. He's in Severance.
That's right.
Like, that's really, really cool. So again, the nuanced discussion. I also think sometimes the fighting, like, at the end feels kind of neutered, for lack of a better word, kind of the Black Panther thing where I don't feel the real impact of the punches, of the cuts, of the slices. I'm not totally terrified that that someone's going to die and what the impact that's going to have, partially because it's on a different dimension.
And it's the soul sucking, which is very not
very
visceral.
Different. Like, I think Awkwafina is a really fun character. I think she's funny. I think the nasty B line at the end makes Anika and I laugh so hard.
That makes, like, me. That's the other.
Just
that
how
and the
casual
weird horse
she
line.
Is with it. You know, with the whole thing, so funny. But then, like, tying into the action, like, it's a little bit hard for me to get my mind around the ninjas that are, like, the ultimate warriors not being able to get her on the side of the building. It's like she can escape them by falling down the platform and stuff. I'm like, come on. So that's what I mean.
Which, you know, in fairness, Shang-Chi is kind of holding them off, or supposed to be.
There's one so where a ninja slices at her and she dodges it. And then it chops the board and she falls down. She almost falls off the cliff, off the skyscraper. But I'm like, how does the guy even miss that swing if he's, like, the ultimate ninja and she's just a random valet driver? I mean, it's not like...
Right.
Do you see what I'm saying? Like,
No, for sure.
I like the mysticism of the Ten Rings and that they have this... It's like, I love the intro, that they have this magical history and it's ancient. So again, positive, love it. And then towards the end, I don't know that I love how fantasy it gets with, like, a Chronicles of Narnia lion and a Pokemon, Ninetales. Like, it's cool. Again, in Guardians of the Galaxy, I praise the imagination, so I'm not trying to say that. But I remember the very first watch we did in Austin, I kind of left feeling, like, a little bit empty about it because I think I was so caught off guard that that's the direction we went versus the bus fight. And then here's my last one. And I'm sorry, I'm just ranting here, but, like, I think...
No, I love it.
In some ways, Simu Liu does such a good job. Like, that is Shang-Chi. And then in some ways, I'm like, a lot of people could have played Shang-Chi. which I know that's horrible maybe to say or blasphemous. Yeah. Like I see Iman Vellani and I go, wow, it is perfect right. for Ms. Marvel. Like no one else could have done Ms. Marvel is how I feel.
Right.
I see Shang-Chi and I go, he does a good job. But I do think there are probably 15 other people out there who could also do a good job. So again, none of this is meant to be hot takey. That's just my nuanced watch of the whole thing. Like everything about this film, I go, that's cool. I don't love that as much. And so I think it just mm-hmm. kind of ultimately feels like a middle of the road MCU film. That's from a high level critical standpoint. I'm also down to talk about more plot things for sure.
Yeah, well, I do think briefly, I had the same thought with Simu in this one, especially because this is the first time I've watched this movie since watching him in Barbie. And I actually feel like he shines much more in Barbie, even though it's a much smaller role. Like he's really clicked in and funny and like he's on like the same wavelength as Gosling there, and it just works really well. And because of that, it makes me think in this movie that there's a little bit of what we talk about some with the first Thor and Hemsworth, where it's like, it makes so much sense. Like the casting I think is great and the right call. I think it might take another project or two
totally fair.
Before he settles in to like becoming who this character will be.
Thor 1 to Thor 2 is a huge jump for Chris Hemsworth. Thor 2 to Thor 4 is a massive jump for Natalie Portman. Thor, there are so many examples. Captain Marvel 1 to the Marvels is a huge jump for Brie Larson. So I'm with you. I think he does a good job, and yet I leave feeling like there's more there. Oh, and like, by the way, before you rant, I do want to say this. The last thing I would also add is visually, same thing. Like there's a shot of him when he's drowning in the water. From like the side, it looks so cool to me. I'm like, what a great visualization as he's going down and he's about to stare at this dragon face to face. And it looks so cool. The side one more than the front the up close one. And there are a couple like zoomed out things that look spectacular. And then, you know, there are some weird CGI things. I mean, some of the dragon stuff looks like green screened and sometimes it looks like they're fighting in front of a green screen thing. And there's a little bit of Tao Lo that feels what you say with Ragnarok, a little soundstagey, like we're trying to make this epic world, but it looks like I can see where like the screen ended and began.
Right.
Like here's them fighting on a set and then everything else in the background feels detached from it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know what I mean? It's just either or. So keep going. Sorry.
No, I think that's a good, like, I had a similar reaction generally, like, where it's like, I came away from this with very few hot takes, which does not make for, like, you know, the most inflammatory podcast. But yeah, I think that, like, when it comes to a lot of the performances, but like, especially his, when he's being really funny, that works really well. And when he's being really dramatic and like taking it very seriously, that works very well. I think it's that kind of middle area where it's like, are you like stoic and like Captain America superhero, or are you like a little bit more of like an Iron Man, like not take it as seriously superhero? And I think that's the kind of thing where I think just from a plot perspective, I'm willing to buy that here because he doesn't really know who he is yet. And he's supposed to be kind of at war with himself, but I would like to figure out kind of what that character looks like now that he's kind of integrated. Like he's no longer like civilian Sean and like Shang, like he is in
which
the movie.
Is one of the funniest lines, by the way. You change your name to Sean.
Michael to Michael.
I think she's funny. I don't know if that's a hot take.
I think that's actually one of my favorite like comedic roles that she's been in. I don't always buy Awkwafina's contributions to films, but this is one where I have very little. I thought that it might be something that kind of annoyed me, and it never does.
I think it's because once she gets to Tao Lo, or once she realizes what Shang is instead of Sean, there's a sincerity there. That's what works for me.
Yeah.
Is that she then kind of buys in and approaches it with the correct level of respect, if that makes sense. Like, yeah. I don't think during the last fight, for example, she's joking around the whole time. It's when she's recapping the story that makes it so funny. If she was like goofing around while they're about to die, that's what I'm like, this just feels out of place.
No, for sure. Like it that's handled well by her and from like a writing perspective. And one of the lines from Shang-Chi that always gets me is at the very beginning, like at the very beginning of that like final Ta Lo battle sequence, when she's like, okay, I'm just going to go take these dragon arrows out to the range. And he's like, oh, you're going to take the dragon arrows out to the range.
Yeah.
Like that to me works, and their chemistry works really well. And that's another thing I want to
bring up. I've always thought there's a little Candace there. Is that crazy? Like in that she does approach it with sincerity, but has those kind of jokes. Like that's a Candace joke to say, I'm just going to take these dragon arrows over here, and like pointing out the ridiculousness of the situation. Right. I don't know if that's.
No, fair, I actually think that like even like the mega soul sucker.
Yeah.
Line at the end. Exactly. Is a Candace line.
Like if Candace was thrown into that situation, that's how she would recap it. At dinner, right? Or, you know, like whatever.
Right.
Like that's how she'd recap it.
Which I also like in that scene, the like Shang-Chi has some funny lines too, which is my point. Like it once they kind of figure out what he's supposed to be and what role he plays, which is kind of something you brought up in last week's episode too. But I don't think I realized the last few times that I watched this, and maybe I read it wrong this time, but there's kind of more of a setup for them having a romantic thing in the future than I thought there was. Am I crazy?
Those two?
Yeah.
I don't know about like, that, the but line, they're definitely close friends, and that in the post-credit sequence, it's kind of interesting that they include both of them. Wong says, right? Both of
right,
you.
Right. Well, and like, I always thought that it was kind of, I think I maybe even in a prior episode said that it was like, I liked that it was seemingly just platonic, but then I realized like there's that line at the very beginning from, I think her grandmother saying like, when are y'all going to get married? And he's like, oh, no, we're just friends. And then there are like a few moments later in the movie where she's either like resting her head on his shoulder or like they kind of like have this brief moment of looking at each other that feels like,
I think it's like, pretty well done. Cause if in the future they fall in love, it'd be a perfect like slow burn.
But if not, it's not like they set something up that they never delivered on.
Right. It's not like they gave them one big kiss in the middle that it's like, oh, we shouldn't have done that. You know, that kind of thing. They didn't do that.
Yeah. And that would have been weird.
Right.
But I think like that is the kind of thing where I'm curious to see where that relationship goes. And there's a part of me that I think, you know, it's important in these properties to find ways to put them in new situations so you don't wind up with a situation like Thor 2 where it's kind of just...
Good point. What a good point.
Here he is again doing Thor stuff.
I was thinking the exact same thing right when you started that sentence. Like, where does it go? That's why I'm so excited to see them interact with the Avengers or interact with just the Avenger type world. Like what role can he play in San Francisco if Ant-Man's also there? And like, what does that mean for them two together? I think it'd be a misstep to have them go back to like another dimension or Ta-Lo. And like I don't want a film where they get isolated into the same kind of adventure, you know? There's a chance for it to be really fun and really special if they take the right, I shouldn't say right, but in what I would consider to be the correct steps. But I also think there's a chance for it to feel Thor 2 if it kind of retreads some of that stuff.
Because and talking about like cabining it, I was kind of thinking about the Guardians trilogy too while I was watching this. And I realized, not to just like keep dropping like fictional Robbie cuts of movies, but I'm just not like, I'm curious why they decided to put Ta Lo in this movie. Because to me, it seems like it would make a lot of sense to have this movie focus just on like the final battle being a battle between him and his dad, which we get in this movie.
Right. But at the headquarters.
Yeah. And it's more about like his dad's now bringing him back and is intent on making him take over. And he doesn't really want to do that, and figuring out kind of who he is within that, and then inheriting the ring somehow still. And then like, in the same way that it's like with, you know, Guardians 1, all the focus is on like the impact that Quill's mom has. And then at the very end of Guardians, you find out like,
and top five
your father was something.
Oh.
So then you know that like, that's the next thing is like, but like, what does that bring to the table?
Peter, take my hand. Like, one of my favorite moments.
Wouldn't it make sense? Like, there's so much of a conversation about like, you're both things, you know, your father and your mother. And I feel like the second movie could have been the Talo movie. Like, now he does somehow wind up in this dimension and figure out like the legacy of his mom and like where he comes from. And like, that's when he can get like the dragon scale.
Would that feel too Guardians 2 then, to use the parallel though? Would that feel so isolated at that point that we're like, what does this have to do with anything with Kang or, you know, whatever, you know what I mean?
Maybe, but it's all, you know, I don't know. That's kind of the model for the, not for all, but it's like, I look at Lord of the Rings or like Empire, where it's like, you know, you split people up, you put them in kind of isolated situations, and that's definitely what Gunn was drawing on.
Well, those are bad examples, I think. I'm not getting into that. But those movies are still connected in a way to what the overarching narrative they're telling is.
Well, but they're also not in a larger universe. Like, they're like Guardians 2 is certainly connected to the narrative from Guardians 1.
Yeah,
it's just not connected to the Infinity Saga.
So then it's just a hard comp, basically.
Yeah.
It's a hard comp.
I
think I'm with you. I agree. I think in general, for me, just personally, I was turned off by the entire Talo nature of it. And I think you're right. Like, if it had stayed in San Francisco and Awkwafina figures out who Sean really is, and that revealed to me is so cool. I love in these origin stories when people find out about their powers. Like,
right.
It's the weirdest thing to crave, but I crave like when people don't know Spider-Man's identity, I'm watching the originals. I go, just tell her. I want to know what her reaction is. I want to know what in the video game, I want to know what the reaction is when Aunt May finds out. Like, for some reason. So like that reveal, I love that. That's like where I'm like, this is so cool. When she says, he's not a fighter. You have the wrong guy. What are you talking about? And then he does all the moves and she's like, what the? That to me, I have chills right now, is so cool. And then,
you could have kept it
like
a
let's go figure out about our history. And then my dad's still doing this bad thing. And we got to take down this organization, like climbing the side of the wall kind of thing and fighting inside the headquarters or, you know what I mean? Or fighting ninjas there in the darkness. And that could have been a whole different vibe. That's probably more what I wanted and thought we were going. I remember the first watch very distinctly. I was staying at that hotel by the airport and we talked about it afterward. I wanted that for sure. But I will say the only pushback to all that is I do think clearly they wanted to do a fantasy spin on this film. Clearly. In partial, I think, to honor a little bit of that tradition. Like something we hadn't gotten really. Not anime, but like a little bit of a mystical dragons, like a different culture's history. So that, you know, they wanted to do that, whether it's for us or not. But clearly that's what they were shooting for. And the second thing I'll say is I know on our Discord, there are people that think differently than us. There are lot of people that think the Talo thing and the Ninetales thing is so cool. So it did work spectacular for some people. Hence us putting Shang-Chi at whatever, fourth or third in our rankings and people losing their minds about it.
And
so it worked for some people.
And I would say it's not like it didn't not work for me as much. Like I don't dislike it. It's more like, I think I just realized it doesn't have that much of a role to play in. Like I feel like it accelerates things unnecessarily, I guess. Like, and the reason I talk about breaking that out for a different film, it's a similar thing to how I feel about like, Miss Marvel when we talk about those middle episodes.
Okay. Where for me, a tiny bit Black Widow, where I go, I just wish the last third was in a bunker and not in the sky kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. I think it's I don't understand why we have to, anytime things are kind of crammed in. And again, I am not saying that it's like such a left turn or something. Like, I think the movie, it opens with when we're going to T'Talo. Right. So like, I'm not saying it doesn't fit. There's symmetry there.
Miss Marvel is a left turn, but yes, not here.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think that for me, I'm just thinking, okay, one of the cool things about this movie is that we think we're going to see him get his powers, and we realize like he's already this insane fighter.
Right.
And that's what makes the bus scene so cool.
We talked about that in the original episode.
Right.
Good point.
But then I'm like, okay, so he's already such a skilled fighter that he can take on like 10 guys at once that are all super skilled ninjas. And then he winds up with the 10 rings, which are so cool. And just him having his fighting skills and the 10 rings already make him like a top tier superhero in terms of his, like his abilities. So I'm not sure why this is also like, we need to also explore him learning this like special, like mystical fighting style now, when like, to me, it seems like that's a, okay, here's a second film. Now maybe he's like, he's somehow lost the rings temporarily, like he has to figure out a way to like be a protector, but he's like been stripped of some of his abilities, and then having to like get back in touch with like what his mom, who she is and what she knew and would have taught him. And like that, to me, it could almost be like the opposite of Guardians 2, in that it results in him having like even more power coming out of that second film, because now he's combined. Mm-hmm. And even though he doesn't have like the power that you only have when you're in T'Talo, he has like the understanding of that style. Like it feels like there's so much to explore there. And I'm with you in that I don't really want to go back there in the next film. So I don't really want to explore it more moving forward, but it seems like they could have made it even more grounded and saved this stuff for a later entry, I guess.
So I totally agree. We've been talking this whole episode about the nuanced discussion, even that, you know, like the first half, could it have been a two-parter, et cetera. And we have a subscription-based thing here on Friends From Work called Friends From Work Plus. There are different tiers to Friends From Work Plus, and the very highest tier, our closest and most dear supporters are our super friends, and they have direct access to us in a way that if they want to get a thought into an episode, we are kind of starting from now on. Like if you want to get a thought and you're a super friend into a Friends From Work episode, you are going to do that. And so our first time doing that, Ravi, direct access, here's one of our super friends, Jalen. And I think this ties in perfectly to some of the nuanced discussion we've been having. Give this a listen.
It's Jalen. I just got one thing to say. I watched this probably about 2 weeks ago, and I'm still pissed off that they killed my boy Deathstealer. How are you going to leave us with Razor Fist but kill off Deathstealer? He's the coolest looking one in the whole thing, especially after our whole history of ninjas. You're going to give us the coolest looking ninja and kill him off, and not only kill him off, you're going to make one of the Soul Eaters kill him off. I think it would have been way, way better story-wise if we were left with Deathstealer and Razor Fist was the one that died. Because imagine if his sister leading the Ten Rings now, and she has Deathstealer by her side, who was one of the ones that helped raise Shang-Chi and learning his martial arts, and then they have this whole kind of friction with each other because they don't like each other. I don't know. I just think it would have made way more sense than to keep that cooler character around. And honestly, you probably would have made more money buying cooler Death Dealer toys and Death Dealer merch than any Razor Fist merch. I don't know. Just my thoughts. What do you guys think? Thank you, guys. Bye.
So
I can't stop.
I hadn't heard all that. Go ahead.
Every time I hear Razor Fist now, I hear Taser Face.
Taser Face. It's metaphorical. That is a little bit. By the way, I didn't just handpick that because I feel that way. But that's a little bit of kind of the tension I feel too.
Yeah.
Not just with that, but like, I think objectively, Razorface is not a super compelling character, right? It looks a little bit lame. It's a little bit weird how quickly he turns at the end, like to help them.
Yeah.
I don't buy that he's a super intense disciple for some reason of this Ten Rings thing. And I'm kind of with them. Like, why not have Razorface die in a moving scene? And then you have this guy who's a crazy ninja, a way cooler looking, darker, you know, figure. I think easier to buy that he's a disciple of the Ten Rings. Stick around. Yeah. And then it's this awkward tension of the guy that helped raise you is now the guy you're fighting, slash, like he said, with his sister. Like, now if, like, after that whole fight, that guy is still following his sister, that's some interesting tension.
Yeah.
I think he's right.
No, that's, and it's a really good point. Like, to me, it kind of only further emphasizes why these could be broken out into two movies too, because you do have that storyline about Shang-Chi being raised, and like the indicator of whether he's ready was whether he could beat Death Dealer in a fight. And then you have that scene where he almost kills him and then is stopped at the last second by Wenwu. And there's never really any follow-up on that. Like, he never has another moment with that character. So it's kind of like it's not like a dropped plot line, but it's something that you could imagine having some kind of like culminating thing in the final act. And instead, to have that character just not even killed by like the mega soul sucker like Wenwu is, but just by one of the small ones. And yeah, because it's so weird too that Razor Fist is like this. I think he's like the only white guy that we ever see in the Ten Rings. And he's like not a particularly like cool or compelling one. So it's like,
why not sacrifice him? Why not sacrifice him?
Yeah, like let's get it would make way more sense if that character only existed.
Like, why is he
there? Sacrificed to
what
a
is his
sucker.
Argument for being there?
And like, it just the whole, like, his car and all of it, it's like, I just don't know why. Yeah, like, in the round table when they're, like, coming up with story ideas.
That's what I mean,
who's,
man.
Like, we have to have Razor Fist.
I think all of that is a perfect way to wrap it. I think that kind of sums up some of my tension. In some ways, I just lost my light over here, sorry. In some ways, I love a ton of, like, it's a great entry as an origin. It's really funny at times. It's fun. Some of the action's really compelling. I think that honoring a totally different culture and coming up with some unique creative plot choices is a huge win. Mm-hmm. And then also some of the other stuff I said, some of the stuff doesn't look as good. Some of the stuff doesn't make as much sense. I'm not as bought into certain things. But my lasting takeaway is it's a good origin story, a good entry into the MCU. And on top of that, I'm excited for what a second entry could be. There's potential for Simu Liu, for the characters to feel more settled in, for Destin Daniel Cretton to feel even more settled in, and the writers to figure out exactly where it could go. And then there's room for it to feel connected in some way, and that pumps me up. Because of the way this character was started in his origin, I'm excited to see it like blossom with Wong or the Avengers or Bruce. And like, what does Bruce say to Awkwafina?
Right.
You know, like all of that sounds interesting to me. So I think it's a good entry that could improve depending on where they go in the future. That's my summary.
No, and I agree. I want to clarify, and this kind of makes sense with my background and what I'm drawn to. I do have a lot of fun in the not necessarily the Tallow battle in general, but I like the Shang-Chi stuff, like the final like Kamehameha blast thing. Like, I do think is like, that's fun for me.
Yeah, we didn't talk enough about that. Like my wife, you know, she loves monsters. She loves when the dragons show up. And it is pretty dope when he does the huge blast. And like the first time it's revealed that he's riding it, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. No, it's like, again, none of my comments here are trying to like cut out those things. It's just,
I don't think people thought that
where they go. But
But
I agree. I think it's like, it's a fun movie. I think that there's some, you know, it could be tightened up at points, like we've said. But I am really excited to see both where that goes, you know, what we talked about with those post-credit scenes, but also kind of our next stop into Ms. Marvel.
Sorry, I just thought of, that's more. A weird-looking horse. I just thought of.
it's so funny to me every time. Ben Kingsley's so, like, character is hilarious.
When I figured out they taught the apes to ride the horses and act like that, they're all like, oh yeah, totally.
I love also when she's like, hey man, that's great. You found your passion. Yeah. I mean, you did use it to cripple the US government.
Yeah, right.
And what even also, I'm not trying to take us back in, but like when he's like, you know, years ago, I got this job playing a terrorist. I know, facile, trite. But listen,
yeah, it's so dude, he is funny. It's really funny.
It's a great character. But I like, I'm excited to see now.
Yeah, we're going to Ms. Marvel. Sorry.
We have kind of finished this phase, in real time, but also, yeah, we're moving into Ms. Marvel where there is that connective tissue. Like I'm curious to see how Shang-Chi operates as a like quote unquote multiversal player here, because I was thinking again, something else that I kind of noticed for the first time as we're moving forward here is like, it really does, you know, it's not just that you can only get to this village by going through the forest maze. Like there is that very clear visual of them like entering the waterfall, and then it like materializes almost like a Doctor Strange portal into Talo. So it's like I keep getting tongue tied.
I know.
You have like an actual place that is like, it's called a different dimension, but then when he's there, they several times when they're talking about their like the main MCU Earth, like they refer to that as being a separate universe. And I know way back you and I debated like, what's a dimension? What's a universe? Mm-hmm. You know, like what's a different reality or a timeline? And so it seems to me now on this watch that they're using that interchangeably.
Yeah.
And so is this actually like, not that it's necessarily an alternate Earth per se, but like,
It just contributes to the slight looseness, the slight difference that we always talk about, I think.
For sure. But I do like, and again, I need to look and see.
Is this on Earth still, but through a portal to a different side of Earth? Did that happen in the sacred timeline?
That's what I always thought, but I don't think that like now my takeaway from the most recent watch is that it's meant to be a different universe in the same way that like 838 in Multiverse of Madness is a different universe.
Okay. So a totally separate timeline. I mean, I'm making this up, but that's a universe that could be just adjacent to the Fox X-Men universe per se or whatever. Okay.
I think so. Like otherwise, like because there are just several lines that stood out to me where it's like, this is how it's different. You know, even in your universe, like we had cities and whatever that way outstripped anything that y'all have ever had.
So it could be a different planet.
Yeah, but yeah, and a different planet within a different universe also. Yeah. So it's like we don't even know what the Earth analog in that universe is.
Right.
And even the way that they talk about the threat of the Dweller in Darkness and how, like she says, if it got through, it would destroy your entire universe. And I think at the end, Katie says like, yeah, we were able to save the universe. So it is like it's more of a multiversal thing, I think.
Yes.
Than I knew at the time, because we didn't even have No Way Home.
Which I would like. I would like, if there is even more connectivity, I think that's cooler. It makes this film cooler.
And it makes it even more appropriate, I think, to open this last chapter.
And it makes Tao Lo a little easier for me to stomach if it's a totally different universe than this little pocket on Earth. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like this hidden village. I think it's cooler if it's just like, oh, we went to a different one for a second, especially if all this eventually comes back together eventually.
Yeah. That's what, and it, I mean, because it also makes, like Wong talks about the way that they found Shang-Chi is the first time he used the rings, you know, set off this like massive.
Yes. Like, and I want to know what that is, the beacon. Like, how are they communicating multiversally?
But, and I remember thinking like, wait, but isn't he in a different dimension? Like, what does that even mean? But I think I was still thinking like, I don't think I just must have missed it. I don't think I fully understood how separate of a place they were trying to set that up as. Like, the village is just like the outpost of this kind of whole other larger universe thing. But if that's the case, then that's also interesting because it means that he was using the Ten Rings in a different universe. And like, how does that play into kind of what we've been seeing? Like when we're talking about like incursions and Monica being left in this other universe, like, is there a way that all of that is going to kind of be operating by the same rules?
What I do know,
I would love that.
What I do know is that all of that gets me excited. And that could be really sick. Like, there is potential for the next 3 or 4 years to be so sick.
Yeah.
In a very similar way to the Infinity Stones, this idea that there's these beacons to these other multiverses, and humans as we know them in the Sacred Timeline are very, as Wong says, like, and Vision, very unfamiliar with multiversal stuff. And then them having to learn about that and then getting to see them wrestle with what that means when they come face to face with other dimensions now. I mean, it could be sick, dude. And then it could ultimately elevate the viewing of this film. That's my point.
Man, I know. And I think that what's going to be tricky about that is they would have to explain in the Shang-Chi context. Now I'm realizing how they were able to travel to and from universes and what made that available, because there's a big thing about America's the only one that can do that.
But that's and not also, true also, because now we've seen that like Monica can do it theoretically. Right, so like
that's true. When it just
people just don't. I think my explanation headcan is that people just don't understand it well enough yet. So even Doctor Strange is like, America can do it. That's weird, but he's only stumbling upon one way to do it. There's other ways. Clearly, there are other ways.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I still like having Loki as the like center linchpin of this entire rewatch, Loki season one, because something else that I saw reading in that timeline book is it's just interesting how certain things are characterized. Because things that are kind of ambiguous on the screen, to have a book like from Marvel and Kevin Feige saying this is how they see it is really telling whether or not you want to adopt that fully. But they even talk about how like Wanda is only able to, like the post-credit scene in WandaVision, like she's only able to look at these different universes using the Darkhold because He Who Remains is no longer
guarding
things and creating the Sacred Timeline. Like, otherwise she would not be able to, like, there wouldn't be these other threads to look at. And so I'm wondering, like, again,
which I think
even with the original Shang-Chi placement, I think that this movie would occur after Loki, because I think that they have Loki occurring like right after Endgame, or, you know, again, it's all weird with time stuff, but so that explains that, but then they would have to explain how like his mom was able to travel back and forth originally whenever she first met Wenwu. And
I'm okay with that special gateway. I'm okay with that one particular thing being a little bit loosey-goosey. Like,
yeah,
it's not weird for me to headcanon that there are multiple ways that they could stumble upon this. Like, America especially stumbled upon it because like she has a power. But maybe Wong doesn't have the power until she has the Darkhold. And maybe his mother doesn't have it because it's just like one secret portal that they discovered a long time ago.
That's the thing. It's like, if it's just like that one entrance, then that doesn't bother me. As long as it's not like, you can get there anytime you want by like clicking your heels three times.
For sure. We got to go. This is a massive episode. Wow.
Wow. It's almost as long as Shang-Chi.
It could be your commentary. Remember when we did that? That's insane.
That was fun.
Yeah, that was fun.
I do, but before we go talking about our tiers and our Friends from Work Plus subscribers, which if you're listening and you are one of those, thank you so much. I also wanted to highlight that our Friends from Work Plus folks that are you know our second tier and up, we are starting or have started the new round of Saturday morning cartoons here leading into the August 1st premiere of Batman the Caped Crusader, which is the animated show from J.J. Abrams, Matt Reeves, and Bruce Timm, one of the primary creators of the 90s Batman show.
What a team.
Man, it's like I'm really excited about it. Everything I read about it. Ed Brubaker is one of the main writers who a lot of people will recognize for his contributions to the Captain America storylines, like the Winter Soldier especially, is a creation of his. He's a great Batman writer too in the comics. And it's all set in like the 40s. It's supposed to be like a very old school kind of noir Batman thing. And I think it has the makings to be something really special, kind of in the way that X-Men 97 was for the X-Men 90s show. So we are, between now and then, going to be watching a kind of handpicked selection of the Batman 90s episodes that that we think are either just some of the best or could kind of fit tonally with that. So that will be every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Central if you're interested. And we'll be discussing that in the Discord again, talking about the reasons for signing up there. But we'll be talking about that together every Saturday morning kind of while we're watching. So I would invite people to join in for that as we kind of get ready for the next animated premiere.
Absolutely. My final statement will be, we have two very valued partners here at Friends from Work, Nerd Riot and OrganicPriceBooks.com. And so you've heard us talk about them, but it actually is a win-win-win for all of us, for them, for you, for us. If you support them and you use our promo code Friends from Work, get some merchandise at NerdRiot.shop and get you some comics at OrganicPriceBooks.com. There's so much stuff you can check out on those websites, but it benefits everybody, including you, if you're going to be getting comics and merchandise anyways. Thanks for listening. We'll see you right back here next time on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.